2021. This is Iris Grigoraș, the editor-in-chief at Delegate Snapshots. Welcome to Editors Speak, where you can listen to our essential articles of the week. This week, we will feature an overview of the legal committee and an analysis of the South China Sea dispute.
The legal committee, an overview. All you need to know about the 6th Committee of the United Nations General Assembly. Commonly referred to as the Legal Committee, the 6th Committee, or C6, of the General Assembly, GA, primarily focuses on legal questions concerning public international law or other legal matters targeting the United Nations and its internal affairs. Consequently, all 193 member states of the UN are entitled to representation in the committee. The C6 is responsible mainly for the proposals to amend the Constitution and the rules of procedure of the General Conference, negotiating the implementation of new international treaties, handling annual reports from its subsidiary bodies, and tackling legal questions submitted by the GA or any of its organs. Formation and purpose. The Legal Committee's main task is to examine legal issues in the program of the GA. Additionally, it reviews requests for observer status and deals with crucial issues such as the promotion of justice, drug control, crime prevention, and combating international terrorism. Not to be confused by this, but these topics are tackled as well by other UN organs which may or may not participate in the GA. Furthermore, the C6 manages the annual reports from its corresponding organs. Here is a list of all the subsidiary bodies reporting to the Legal Committee. Committee on Relations with the Host Country, International Law Commission, Special Committee on the Charter of the United Nations and on the Strengthening of the Role of the Organization, United Nations Commission on International Trade Law, United Nations Program of Assistance in the Teaching, Studying, Dissemination, and Wider Appreciation of International Law. And last but not least, ad hoc committees established by the GA in the context of the work of the C6. For example, Committee on Measures to Eliminate International Terrorism. Unsurprisingly, the Legal Committee only accepts delegates with plenty of experience in the legal field, such as diplomats and legal advisors. Past international involvement in action. The work of the 6th Committee is vast and substantial due to its unique nature. Mainly, it deals with annual reports from the subsidiary bodies of the GA that require legal attention. One of the most important is the International Law Commission, created in 1947, with the purpose of developing and reviewing international law. Among other things, each year, the C6 searches for counterterrorism measures and creates a designated resolution on this topic. Fun facts about the committee. In 2005, the C6 proposed the United Nations Declaration on Human Cloning, which was later adopted within the GA by the member states with 84 in favor, 34 against, 37 abstaining, and 36 absent. The declaration was against human cloning. It stressed the importance of the responsible and ethical use of genetic engineering techniques and the protection of human life and scientific research. Curiously enough, some delegations were concerned about banning therapeutic cloning, which is used in experiments oriented towards curing diseases by studying cloned embryonic stem cells with the same DNA as a donor cell. Some other past actions of the Legal Committee include the International Convention Against the Taking of Hostages, adopted in 1979, and the International Convention for the Suppression of the Financing of Terrorism, from 1999. International Law Week. During International Law Week, Legal advisors from different countries and special reporters of the Commission meet at the end of October in New York City to discuss the report from the International Law Commission. Reports of the International Court of Justice, or ICJ, and the International Criminal Court, ICC, are also presented to the plenary of the GA. The president of the ICJ is offered an invitation to the discussions as well. The 75th meeting. The C6 convenes during the regular sessions of the GA and finishes its work in mid-November. Much like the other main committees of the United Nations, it can reconvene for re-elections or specific issues at the request of the GA. Last year's items on the agenda included crimes against humanity, responsibility of international organizations, and even expulsion of aliens. As a matter of fact, several delegations highlighted the connection between the topic and human rights law in regards to state sovereignty. Legal amiant topics. Sought out by many delegates for its versatility, the Sixth Committee stands out as an interesting opportunity to get acquainted with legal matters and what they might entail. We recommend this committee if you are intrigued by topics related to the question of justice, counter-terrorism measures, or the UN legislative framework. Here are several international and national conferences that held a legal committee in the past. BIS-MUN 2020. A. The issues of state responsibility for environmental damage. B. The changing dimensions of international terrorism, implementing the global counter-terrorism strategy. Harvard World MUN 2021. Defining terms and developing international measures regarding captivity of political prisoners. Vianu MUN 2020. The question of veto, avoiding the abuse of power, and the principle of self-determination of states. GAL MUN 2020. Exploring the rights and limitations of artificial intelligence. YASH MUN 2021. Establishing reforms within the United Nations. Concluding remarks. Unquestionably, the work conducted by the Legal Committee expands over many issues and spreads beyond the sphere of strictly legislative questions in an interesting and highly challenging fashion. Despite its complexity defined by the substantial coverage, many of the topics provided by MUN conferences for this committee are accessible even to first-timers. If you are considering pursuing a career in the legal field in the future, we strongly encourage you to give the C6 a chance.
The South China Sea dispute is one of the most renowned issues that deals with international law and, more specifically, maritime law. An estimated amount of $5 trillion of international trade flows through the South China Sea, with some of the key economic resources of the region being oil, natural gas, hydrocarbon, and fish stocks. Formally beginning in 1945, but with a history spanning since the 3rd century BCE, the divergent claims over this region have made certain countries resort to novel solutions to have a sovereign claim. We'll take a look at the history of the issue, its legal implications, and we'll go through the key takeaways of the dispute as well. According to a general consensus among countries, the modern dispute began in 1945, when the Republic of China's military, along with American help, claimed the Paracel and Spratly Islands, invoking the Cairo and Potsdam declarations as the legal basis. Historically, however, China traces the roots of the dispute to the 3rd century BCE, when the Chinese fishermen are claimed to have started using the Spratly Islands. The Southeast Asian dispute is deeply rooted in the region's colonial history. While most neighboring nations cite a decade-old grudge, Beijing argues that its claims stretch far back centuries.
China outlined its claim, the Nine-Dash Line, in 1947, which extends as far as 1,800 kilometers into the South China Sea, crossing the boundaries of the economic exclusive zones of Malaysia, Vietnam, Brunei, the Philippines, and Indonesia. More than $5 trillion worth of international trade flows to the South China Sea, with key resources being oil, natural gas, hydrocarbon, and fish stocks. A Forbes analysis of the dispute comes to the conclusion that whoever controls these shipping lanes rules the Asian century. This, along with the international security aspect and the political importance of the region, make the scramble for control over the South China Sea one of the persisting legal, political, and economic issues of the century. The South China Sea provided for the China National Offshore Oil Corporation, the CNOOC, the equivalent of more than 400,000 barrels a day in 2019, according to worldoil.com. Moreover, in recent months, the United States of America has blacklisted the CNOOC for bullying in the region, as the company has drilled in waters far from its borders for years, 200 miles off countries including Vietnam and the Philippines. There is an undeniable parallel between China's actions in the South China Sea and Russia's in Crimea. The tactics employed by both nations revolve around creating evidence for their claim over the land they have de facto control over. In China's case, Beijing has resorted to creating artificial islands and militarizing the Spratly Islands archipelago, tactic which, albeit not formally recognized by the government, has brought significant criticism on the PRC. The United States is one of the most vocal opponents of the Chinese Nine-Dash Line, fearing that China's monopoly in the region could dramatically shift the odds in China's favor. Some might wonder, however, why the United States, a global superpower whose capital city, Washington, D.C., is more than 8,600 miles away, takes interest in this dispute. Why do China and the U.S., two wildly different countries in terms of political systems, but that share common development models and are economically interdependent, play on the verge of confrontation? The United States has a wide-ranging security concerns and commitments in Southeast Asia, being an ally of several nations neighboring the disputed area, such as the Philippines. Moreover, the South China Sea is a crucial worldwide supply chain, used by American companies to transport the goods they produce in the region. Although the United States does not officially support any of the claimants, it has conducted operations to determine the excessive claims and ensure the free passage of commercial ships. The legal implications. The main legal issue that surrounds the South China Sea dispute is represented by the claims of each country, which are as follows. China. The PRC claims close to the entirety of the resource-rich South China Sea territory. The claim is widely known as the Nine-Dash Line, which stretches from the Hainan Islands in China to the coast of Borneo, covering some of the busiest worldwide shipping trade lines. Taiwan's claims are largely similar to the PRC's, being based upon the same principles that China invokes, specifically the historical claim. According to both Beijing and Taipei, the Parsa and Spratly Island trains were recognized as integral parts of the Chinese nation. Vietnam challenges China's historical account on the basis of the continuous active rule it had over the islands since the 17th century, invoking the necessary documents to prove this. The Philippines adduces its geographical proximity to Spratly Islands as the principal basis of the claim. Both the Philippines and the PRC claim on the Scarborough Shoal, commonly referred to as the Hungyan Island, about 160 kilometers away from the Philippines and 800 kilometers away from China. Malaysia claims the territory in the South China Sea that falls within its exclusive economic zone, EEZ, as defined by the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS. Containing up to 200 nautical miles from the territorial sea baseline. Brunei. It does not claim any of the islands, but it claims part of the South China Sea in proximity to it, saying that it falls within its EEZ. Indonesia. The country does not claim any of the Spratly Islands, but both the Chinese and the Taiwanese claims extend into its EEZ and continental shelf, including Indonesia's Natuna gas field. Along with those claiming different parts or all of the territory being disputed, the United States' economic, political, and security concerns and interests play a key role in the legal conflict. The main issue is that, with the PRC potentially gaining de facto control over the territory, it will be able to control all transit of goods and could potentially block all military ships from passing, thus endangering the US's ability to defend itself and its influence in the standoff with China. What some miss in how the conflict is playing out is what it would mean if it were to come to an abrupt end. Not only would the countries taking part in the dispute have to call in all of their political allies, but worldwide economic interest will have to intervene. Currently, the South China Sea is crossed by some major international shipping lanes, which would fall into the Chinese EEZ, be it if China's 9-dash line would be recognized. While many fear that the South China Sea dispute might escalate into a full-blown proxy war, others hope that all nations will come to their senses and that China will let go of its aspirations to become an empire again. The economic advantages of having the monopoly over the region are undeniable, yet the gamble of upsetting the United States and destroying the precarious equilibrium in the Southeast may not be worthwhile for China to pursue. Regardless of its outcome, the South China Sea dispute is an extremely sensitive legal issue, and some argue China's outrageous claim embodied by the 9-dash line should not be granted, citing the potential tendency of China to want more territory and political sway if the United Nations gives in to its wishes. Until the resolution of the dispute, however, all we can do is sit tight and watch as the political conflict unfolds, with the People's Republic of China creating artificial islands and claiming most of the oil-rich waters of the South China Sea. The dispute may be here to stay for the next few decades.
Thank you for listening to this week's Editor Speaks. For more from Delegate Snapshots, please check out our website and our social media platforms, which can be found in this podcast description. I am Iris Rigoraj, and this has been Delegate Snapshots. Thank you.